Time is a funny thing. Time is a very peculiar item. You see, when you're young, you're a kid. You got time. You got nothing but time. Throw away a couple of years here, a couple of years there. It doesn't matter. You know, the older you get, you say, Jesus, how much I got? I got 35 summers left. Think about it. 35 summers. Spoken by the character Benny in the film Rumblefish. Solve the World, a fictional adventure told in 100 episodes. Episode 86, Variations on the Same Theme. Walk out the door. Don't collect $200 as you pass go. Don't fill the prescription. Don't talk to any doctors. Don't talk to anyone. Keep your head down. No eye contact. It could be anyone. Go unseen through the streets. You can do this, old girl. So, you're crazy. That sucks. Or, you're not. Flip a coin. Think it through logically. What does it mean? Start with the good option. The good option. What's a good option? You're not crazy. What does it mean if you're not crazy? It means Lenore Kotnik is no friend of ours. It means she's part of it. She's against you. She's part of the group who's hunting you, old girl. Or is she? Who could be hunting us? Who is hunting us? The Patriots? The Parrots? Remnants from the Known Triangle? The Numbered Man somehow? Mama Beck fodder? Maybe Piper's changed his tune? Maybe it's that woman who took your hair in Magical Kingdoms Underground? Maybe it's Antonio D'Anconia? He had money, power, maybe a reason to hate us? Or it could be Miles. It could be Miles. He controls people. He could easily be controlling Dr. Kotnik. No problem. Piece of cake. Okay, but if he got to her, who else did he get to? Kotnik mentioned Nathan Petra positively. Said we could trust them. Laid it on kind of thick. They could be corrupted. Not to be trusted. Great. That's the good option. What's the bad? The bad. You're crazy, old girl. Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. So what? What does one do if one is crazy? Naturally, take the pills. Normalize. Get better. With that thought, Jen stopped walking. She pushed herself to a spontaneous halt in the middle of the sidewalk boulevard. At that moment, a flood of nihilism swept in. A sudden urge, a conviction, that all roads lead to the same end. It doesn't matter what we do in this life, we all end up in the same place. We all eventually follow our fathers. Good or bad, crazy or sane, we all end up 6 feet under. A memory stirred, an old speech from Red Jeb Heller. He was Jen's neighbor, a kind and oft-cranky old man. They said he was crazy, a loon, a whack job. He liked to say that Cool Hand Luke was his favorite movie. He liked to describe the movie to Jen in detail. He did a lot of that, recalled movies with as much detail as possible, and retold them, re-song them if necessary. Cool Hand Luke, you see, went to prison for doing something trivial and random. Slicing the heads off old meter maids. This was the way of Luke's life. He always did things well, had a natural charisma about himself. He was pretty, too. Deep blue eyes, unfathomable. He was even in the army once. Got a bunch of medals, but somehow still ended up buck private. Reason was, he always did something that stirred the bosses up something nasty. In the chain gang, Luke does all sorts of things that wins over the allegiances of his fellow inmates. He eats 50 whole boiled eggs in one seating. Stuff like that. Crazy stuff. Stuff that bored men enjoy. In the end, the movie concludes as you'd expect. A classic Romeo and Juliet situation. There's a reason Luke could never get by in the world. It was rigged against him from the beginning. He never had a chance. Jenna Finn stood staring at her hand. The blasphemy. The impulse was now. Here. Cut it off, pluck out a hair from your once bald head, and wrap it around your wrist so tight that the hand falls off. Plump. Watch it fall. Plump. Well, old girl, you do seem a little crazy. Just like old Cool Hand. Just like Red Jet.
Lush's story.
Everyone asks you if you believe in ghosts. It's not a real question, not in the usual sense. They're expecting a certain answer from me. Oh, shut up. Quiet. I'm an old man. Okay? I do what I want. None of you have the right to stop me. Fine. I'll do my best. You'll do your best. There. The only reason you're even speaking is because of the lady last week. I have the counter story. You have the counter story. You've seen it go the other way. You were fighting the Italians during the Second World War. What we did, it wasn't the same as you see in the movies. It wasn't like Normandy Beach. It wasn't like the Russian seizure of Berlin or Leningrad. Where we were, it was all small stuff. Most of it was behind enemy lines. I was behind this car.
No!
You were behind this car, separated from the rest of your pack. The car was saving your life. It was the one thing that prevented the sniper in the tower from taking you out. You were alone in this village, northern Italy. I'm an old man now, but you were young. Once. You were young once. Look deep into my eyes and you'll see the past. It's real. It's still here. Your buddies were back. Maybe 10 kilometers back. You and your comrades we're trying to hook up with another troop. Your guys were stuck in a sort of standoff. Couldn't break through this little village. You drew straws. Sure enough, you're the short one. The short straw. They provide cover, and you run for it. You made it, and now it was your job to meet the other troop and bring them back to save your guys. They're stuck. See? That was my mission. Only problem is there's this sniper in a two-house town shooting at you on your way. That's why you're hiding behind this car. As best as you can tell, there's just one guy. He may be with his wife or family, so it's possible that if you kill him, his wife or son pick up his rifle. Start where he left off. But odds are, kill him, and you're free. This is the last village before the troop. At least, that's what your information, your intelligence says. It's just this one guy. This one sniper, this one bloody Italian. That's all that stands between death and salvation. Not just for you, but for your brothers, your comrades, your boys. It's hot, okay? It's hot. It's just about sunset. The ground is covered in hues and colors of orange and blue. You've got your back against the car, contemplating what to do, listening for the moment. And suddenly, a soldier appears next to you. He's a kid. He's a kid. Just like me. Like you. Just like you. Back against the car. He looks at you, but not quite. There's no time to wonder where he came from. It's like he's trying to look directly at you, but maybe he has a wandering eye? Or in this case, two wandering eyes? You don't have time to think about it. He says to you, he says, I'll go first. You give me cover, two steps behind. We're gonna get through this. You see, that's what he said to you. Before I have a chance to respond, he's going. You don't have time to think. You go. I run, two steps behind him. I fire three rounds towards the window where you think the sniper is. The mystery soldier falls. You pass him. He's bad. He's hit in the gut. Death will come for him slowly. You've seen it before. You know what happens when you're hit in the gut. You've seen other friends hit in the gut. You run towards the barn wall. You can't stop to help him. Not yet. Maybe once you get cover. After all, you might... Maybe... After all, you think maybe you actually hit the sniper on your way. When you get to the barn, you look back. You don't see him. He's not there. The soldier, he was hit in the gut. How'd he get up so fast? Where'd he go? You look for bloodstains on the dirt. You can't find any. You see, there's tall grass just on the other side of the barn. Tall enough to hide you in the dark. The sniper, if he's still alive, he'll never tap you from that far away. Never tap you, never hit you through the grass. You've escaped. You're free. I got to the troop by midnight. They wouldn't veer off course. They refused to take the time to help my buddies. I never saw them again. They all died in the standoff. After the war, my mind drifted to the mystery soldier. You replay those thoughts, those few seconds, over and over and over again in your head. Where did he come from? Why didn't you hear him running up to the car? You were listening for sounds. Why wouldn't you hear his footsteps? Over time, you begin to believe. You believe this. He was a ghost. I'd say an angel, but I don't think angels get shot in the stomach. Fortunately, you do quite well in manufacturing for several decades after the war. This gives you a certain, flexibility, a malleableness to both your time and your finances. You become what they call a hobbyist, a ghost hunter. You're starting with the basics. EMF meters, EVP readers and recorders, motion sensitive, infrared camcorders, and lights. Endless supplies you consume, you buy. You catch glimpses of things over time. You were never a believer. Not really. You were just looking for something to explain what happened that day in that Italian village. Maybe, if I'm being honest, something to rid myself of the shame I felt having not looked more for that boy. That boy shot in the gut. Shot so I could be free. I didn't want to believe that I left him to die. Slowly. I wanted to believe he was a ghost. That's why I took up my hobby. And then, wow, this was 25, 30 years ago now. Late 80s to early 90s, we mapped it. My team, my Ghostbuster team, if you will, figured it. Mapped it all out on paper. You can buy our book if you'd like. Several documentaries feature us. Ghosts aren't real. Hate to break it to you. They just aren't. People are real. People are real. Thoughts are real. Thoughts are real. There's a physical presence to our thoughts. I'm absolutely serious. Absolutely. It's all very real. And more than just our thoughts, our emotions exist as physical realities. If I murdered you here in this room, murdered you with a knife, and first I cut your fingernails off, and then your fingers, and then I skin you while you're alive, that emotion, that utter scream to the heavens, you roar it out from your soul. That emotion stains the space where you stand. Ghosts aren't real. What we think are ghosts are just imprints of our emotions, left long after our bodies are gone. Think of it like light. When you brush your hand back and forth really quickly, you see all the places your hand has been. You see your hand's past, in a kind of way. Emotions stain the air. Most emotions aren't big enough to stain deeply or longly. Emotion, like anything else in reality, has a half-life. But the deeper the emotion, the longer that half-life is. And it just so happens that our deepest emotions are usually bad. It's usually when we die. This is the simplest explanation for why most ghost appearances, ghost, I say in quotes, are bad. Bad thoughts are our strongest emotions. That's what I ran into behind the car. Sometime earlier, maybe a day, a week, a month before, it's possible, there was a boy, a soldier like me, who ran out from behind that car and was shot in the gut. His death left an imprint in reality. That imprint replays and replays and replays, each time a little weaker. With each passing moment, a little less strong. I tell you this, not so that I can prove to you that ghosts don't exist. Not so that I can tout what I saw or didn't see. I tell you this so that you can understand that I have good reason to be an atheist. I have good reason to believe that there are no such things as ghosts. Every ghost sighting ever, I've scientifically explained away. Every single one. There's no afterlife, people. There's no afterlife. That's what I believed with all my heart after my discovery. But then I watched my mother die. She was in the hospital. I was holding her hand. We knew it was coming. She looked dead even before it came for her. But at the very moment she died, her eyes lit up. She was a believer. Not like me. She always told me it was my guardian angel protecting me in that village during the war. You see, I should have been with my boys. Could have been so easy if I would have stayed. If we didn't choose straws, if I didn't get the short one, I would have been there, and I'd be dead. When I told her the truth, that what I saw wasn't a ghost, it wasn't an angel, it was just an imprint, she never doubted her faith. Not even a little. Her conviction was dynamite. When she died, suddenly her countenance blossomed. Her cheeks burned red, her eyes opened wide, the color in them returning momentarily to a deep, vivid sky blue. She smiled as she looked with poised conviction at something beyond the ceiling. The moment came like a breath. She exhaled and was gone from us. I know what I saw. She was being taken away. Her soul was being lifted out of her. She was going to heaven. I had every reason to be a skeptic. You had every reason to be a skeptic. You're not anymore. You're an old man. I am an old man. Listen to my words. Death is all around. But it's not the end of your story. It's not the end. But it's not like that lady from last week said. There's something else. And it's greater. It doesn't have a half-life.
You do seem a little crazy. Just like old Cool Hand. Just like Red Jeb. She missed him for a moment, Jenna Finn, but quickly those nostalgia-laden feelings melted away, replaced by the fake Red Jeb Heller, the one that appeared to her in the labyrinth. Red Jeb and Cool Hand had the same conclusion. They were the protagonists aware, players in a rigged game. They lived, just as the Smashing Pumpkins once prophesied. Despite all my rage, I'm still just a rat in a cage. Jen, old girl, right now, you're the rat. You're either crazy or you're not. But this ends the same either way, doesn't it? How could it not? Crazy or stupid, the end is the end is the end is the end is the end. If she went home, the assassin would likely be waiting for her. Or, if she is crazy, going longer without her crazy pills would end in some mental specter of sardonic deceit and despair. What can you do? She could run, go on the lam, But that's the whole reason Jenna was in Slovenia to begin with. Jennifer Dash, turned Jenna Finn, was a DIY witness protection program. You can't just keep running, especially when there's nothing in particular to run to. The mind turned then, flipped over fully. Jenna gave in to the nihilism, like a current flipping over a clam with its ebb and flow. Go home, old girl. Walk home. Bury your dog. Weep. And wait. Wait for the Reaper. The assassin will return. He'll come for you, take you away, and what's it matter? Doesn't, does it? It doesn't. It all ends the same way. Home. Despite the new nihilist mantle taking root in the corners of Jen's mind, she couldn't help but scope out the entrance to her flat. From all observations, now, as the clock pushed just past high noon, the sun bleeding down appeared to reveal no insidious mercenaries waiting for the prodigal daughter's return. No leviathan lied in wait to devour her. Door. 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 Open. There was a stillness in the house. A slight, very slight, whiff of stank hovered. In a few more hours, the carcass of beloved Gandalf would begin to really make itself known. But not yet. Not yet. For now, the air was merely slightly askew. The back bedroom, that's where he lay. That's where the intruder came in from the dark. The window, that's where he came in. Jen couldn't go there. Instead, bathroom. Enter. Look at yourself in the mirror. Stare at the reflection. Who's there? What's this in front of you? Who's staring back? Who are you? What's your name? Jen, Jenna, Jenny, Naime, Dash, Calling, Firth, Free, Finn. Look at the hand. That's your problem. That's the root. Everything bad comes from it. Cut it off. Cut it off, you. Old girl, be done with it. To the kitchen. In the kitchen. Open the drawer. Grab the knife. Bathroom. Back to the reflection. You better chop fast. You can't expect to saw through. The pain will force you to back down. Swing it down, fast, hard, without remorse. Do it before you talk yourself down. Flashes of Lorna von Schloss, at the precipice, the memory stirring.
I'm just helping, making it so that we can be together, Lori pleaded to Miles. That's not right, Miles said firmly. You remember what you came here to do. You came here to jump.
Do it. The wisps, here, now, in the head. Do it, 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 and 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 do it, do it, do it, and 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 do it. He's here. The ebb and the flow. The clam flipped again. Nihilism vanished like a will-o'-the-wisp. The blood in Jen's veins boiled. The assassin had returned. Jenna had decided, very stoically, that she would return home, properly do away with Gandalf's corpse, and patiently await the Reaper without fear. But now that the moment was upon itself, she found herself lacking courage. She didn't even have enough to look at dead Gandalf in the light. And now, she had not the chutzpah to answer the door. No will to let death in. Jenna Finn feared the Reaper. Not able to control her heart, Jenna dropped the knife. It clanked around as it hit the bottom of the curved sink. 2 steps back, and Jenna stood in the shower. Slowly, slowly, she pulled the curtain. It was a dreadful hiding place. Any eager 3-year-old playing hide-and-seek would have no problem whatsoever finding her. But her heart palpitations would allow for nothing else. If Jenna stepped even 1 foot into the hall, she feared she'd fall dead with fear. Had she ever been this scared? She faced an evil scientist deep in an underground base, a leprechaun torturing cult, monsters of all sizes, a friggin' minotaur for Pete's sake. And now, in the middle of the day, a knock at the door brought with it more horror than any dream Jenna could conjure up. She even locked the front door? Jenna focused hard, tried urgently to listen over the discordant chords of her heart and body, aching and pulsing with fear. She listened, listened, listened for the turn of the screw, the inevitable doorknob twist. She waited in agony for the tiptoeing footsteps, the cock of the gun. Was there a heaven? A next life? Was there a hell? And then, relief. Whoever it was leaving. Jen heard the footsteps fade away from the door. Leaving. Death was leaving. Hope against hope. Another moment to live. You've got some time now, old girl. Now is not the end. You have at least one more moment. What are you gonna do with it? I don't wanna die alone. Jenna said aloud. Hearing her own voice was soothing. Real audio had a certain shine to it. It had its own heartbeat, a certain thickness that voices in the head never quite have. Wisps can't quite attain that level of gravity. I don't want to be alone, she said and repeated the mantra, feeling herself calm with every syllable. I don't want to be alone. So, no matter what, I gotta get out of here. I gotta go. And up she left. Leave behind the rotting corpse of the past. Jen walked to Nate's and Petra's place. Romeo and Juliet is one of those weird cultural icons that, due to its universal status, is quite defanged. When we think of it, we think of the lines, Romeo, Romeo, where art thou, Romeo? And we envision Miss Piggy calling down to Kermit, or Claire Danes yearning for a pre-Titanic Leonardo DiCaprio. We dwell on the story as a classic of young love. That's usually as far as we go. Ah, young love, we pine and move on. But the ending is grueling, beyond grim. It's, of course, not just that they die, everyone dies. This has been established for millennia now. Death is natural. No, it's the very unnatural nature of their deaths that is so devastating. Suicide. Worse still, suicide for no reason. Romeo drinks a poison. Oh well. But Juliet. She has no poison to end herself. So, she uses a knife. A dagger in the gut. On stage, sure. It always comes quickly. No blood. The thespian usually just falls over, lies on top her dead beloved. Dead seemingly instantly. And yada yada, in death, finally we see the two laying as one. They're united at long last. But think of the reality of it. The blood. Unstopping, chugging out. Her intestines perhaps torn and trying to leak out of her skin. The guts of it. And make no mistake, she wouldn't go quickly. It would be agony. Slow, twisting, bloody agony. Jen knocked on the apartment door of Nate's and Petra. No answer. It occurred to her only briefly that they might be hiding from her, just as moments ago she was hiding from her hunter. A second knock, still no answer. Nate's and Petra lived on the bottom floor of a 6-story complex. While all the stories had balconies, first floor inhabitants had a little back terrace. Nate's and Petra often spent time there, and it was likely that they wouldn't hear a knock whilst palling around in the backyard. Jenna found herself walking around the building. She saw them, sure enough, on the terrace from a ways off. Nate's laid out, shrugged over a steeply reclined chair, while Petra's back was to Jen. She, seated at a table, also apparently sleeping, arms crisscrossed, head in her hands.
Hey guys! Hey guys!
Jen called out brazenly, ignoring their obvious desire for a midday nap. No answer. She moved closer.
Hey Nate! Petra!
Metal bars 3 feet tall separated Nate's and Petra's terrace from the outside world.
Hey, wake up, will ya? I need help,
Jen said, only slightly more quietly. She vaulted over the bars, unhesitantly intruding. She walked up and put a hand on Nate's shoulder.
Hey, Nate, Hey, wake up. She shook his shoulder. No response. Nate! Fear creeping back in. Jenna Finn placed both hands on Nate's shoulders. His eyes closed. A line of drool flowing freely down his cheek. Shake him. Shake him hard. Jenna did. No response. Eyes still closed. We don't need to discuss what fears rattled through Jen's mind. It's plainly apparent. Obvious. Papetra woke up before they took root. Jenna? He's not waking up! Jenna said, trying to suppress panic. Shh. Petra said soothingly. He's not waking! Jenna repeated. It's okay, it's okay. Why won't he wake up? He took three. Three? Yeah. Three what? Three pills, Petra said, smiling groggily. I always just take one. But he needs his sleep. It's the only way he can now. Petra rose from the table. Come on, come inside. I'll make a cup of tea for you. They call it Balaam. What is it? Not sure exactly. The guy we buy from says it's made in Japan. From some special tree? And that this species of tree can only grow in this one particular forest in Japan? What does it do? For me, it just takes the stress away. It makes everything rosy. Really, look at my face. Petra smiled broadly. I can think, I can control my body. Petra did a little robot dance to express the profound truth of her words. I can go to work, talk to my mom. Everything's fine. But Nate, and you were... Jenna protested. When I first take it, I get a little sleepy. Just for an hour or so. Fate had dealt Jenna a card. She wanted to be a nihilist. Wanted to care for nothing. Wanted to wait for the Reaper painlessly and without anxiety. She wanted to ascend to that philosophy. But her emotions got the best of her. And yet, here fate was, offering her an answer, a solution. Another pill. Not crazy pills. Chill pills. Can I try it? Petra ended up giving her just one pill. Said they were too expensive to give her two. If Jenna liked it, well then, she could use her well-earned money to buy her own. Jenna wanted to gulp it down right there. But Petra insisted that she shouldn't plan on going anywhere for a little while after her first initial ingestion. So Jenna walked home. Merry. Excited. Home. Home. No one there. Bathroom. Stare at the reflection. Pour a glass of water. Pill in hand. Pill in the mouth. Down the hatch. Drink the water. Don't think about anything. Don't think about your hand. Don't think about rotting Gandalf. Jenna moseyed over and sat on the floor, her back against the wall, facing her front door. Here comes the Reaper. Any moment now. Jennifer Dash sat there and felt cool. Real cool. Just like Luke. She was finally ready to let her assassin waltz right into her life and end it. She sat and waited until...
Solve the World is produced by myself, Dante Stack. Full credit is given to all sound effects and music used in this episode on our show notes page at DanteStack.com. As I do often, I want to wholeheartedly thank those people who have put up their sound effects and music on Creative Commons websites. Thank you for allowing me to use your work.